Hey everyone, Spencer here before the episode. I just want to thank Casey and Mason for coming on the show this week. It was really cool to have them on this live show where we got to interact with some of the fans a little bit and just do the show live for the listeners to celebrate 250 episodes. I also want to thank Michael and Matt. So, as many people know, Michael and Matt will be leaving the show after Pro Tour Guilds of Ravnica, and they'll be replaced by John Stern and Seth Manfield. We're really, really excited for the future of the show. There were some life changes going on in Matt and Michael's lives that were going to cause them not to be able to do the show anymore. And we worked long and hard to figure out who could replace them. And we're really happy with the result. So I just want to take a moment to thank Michael, thank Matt, and thank all of my co-hosts that have done the show with me. It means the world to me to have such amazing people to do this podcast with. And I'm really excited for the future of the show. If you want access to John and Seth's first podcast, go to patreon.com/ccmtg and become a patron of $10 or more, and you'll have access to the Pro Tour exclusive episode that we'll be doing before their first public show. Thank you everybody so much for listening, and enjoy this week's episode of Constructive Criticism. What your critics say that never happened. We dedicate this album to anybody people said couldn't make it.
See ya. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by lots of co-hosts today. I have Casey Tunnell-Bloodworth.
Hey, what's up?
Matt the Mage Kling.
Hey, how's it going?
And Magic Mike Handerocker.
I don't know what you're supposed to say when...
They were already taken. Yeah, both of the things were taken.
You know, we're also joined by the Mason Clark.
Howdy doody. That's what you say, Michael. You go, howdy doody.
And what would you have said?
Hey, y'all, how you doing? And I would have said it with more southern twang.
Yeah, I'm excited to have all these guys. So we're celebrating 250 episodes of Constructive Criticism today. You know who else is celebrating that is our sponsor, Oasis Games. Do you know why? Because they've been sponsoring us for most of that time. And you should check them out at mtgoasis.com. Let them know that we sent you for the 250 episode celebration, and they'll throw in some tokens for you. They'll just do that anyway if you tell them that we sent you. But, you know, you can get some tokens. Hey, guys, I'm really excited for this. Don't worry, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. And you know, anything that you do is really great, and we really appreciate it. So, sorry, I'm like winded for some reason, and we're doing it live, so you know that's a good way to you know make me nervous. But you know who's not nervous is our other sponsor, Edding Gaming. You can check them out at edding.com. Use the code CCMTG10 at checkout to get 10% off your order, and then you know give us a little bit of kickback. If you're going to Oasis, you can use the code CCMTG to get 15% off your first order. The code Would That Be Good at checkout to get 4% off of every order. So. Thanks so much to our sponsors. Let's get right into the show, though, because we got a lot of questions from patrons, and then we're going to talk about the lessons that we've learned that have helped us the most through our time doing the show. So let's get right into this. So if you're a patron of the show, there was a thread that went up that allowed you to ask questions. And yeah, these are all of the questions from our listeners over the past couple of weeks in the Constructive Critics group, which you get to if you're a patron of $5 or more. So the first question that we have, I'm going to direct at Mason. Mason, how do you tune a 75? I find myself copying 5-0s and pros deck lists and have success a bit when I start off, more or less, and I don't know how to adapt the deck to make it better.
Yeah, so I think starting off with 5-0s is definitely a good place when it comes to tuning a deck list. And personally, I try and think about like the event I'm going to. So like if I'm going to a Grand Prix, I might be a lot more interested in looking at what other like what did well the last Grand Prix and what like the metagame Omoto has been looking like and that kind of stuff and pay attention to that. While if I'm going to like a PBDQ, I might be more interested in thinking about what I've seen, what I know the people like to play. So that's kind of how I tune decks, and I play a lot of PBDQ type events, so that's what I'm focused on. I'm curious what the others think about GPs though.
Yeah, Michael, how do you go about tuning a deck or you know, taking something from the 5-0s?
I think primarily my first step is just trying to understand what's happening in the list that I'm looking at. And I think if you can sort of split out sideboard cards and things like that, understand why cards that you may see as flex slots in the main deck are what they are. If you can figure out why cards are what they are, then when you change things, it is much less likely to create a bunch of problems in the deck. So my inclination is that if we know what cards come in what matchups, if we understand sort of what we're trying to beat and maybe what we're giving up equity against, we're a lot more likely to not make a deck worse by tuning it.
That makes a ton of sense. Let's go on to the next question that we have from one of our patrons, which is, do you think if Assassin's Trophy is good enough to make green-black X decks good again, or is it just good enough to make Mardu Pyro the correct choice? I think that's implying that Mardu Pyro is really, really good against these green-black decks that people could be playing.
Interesting. I maybe I misheard the question, but I took that as Mardu Pyro Ranch is like just the best Jund deck, and they're saying when should you be playing actual green-black over Mardu
Pyro. That could be what the question means, too.
Yeah. Thanks. I don't know. I guess I can talk about it since
yeah, go
I'm
ahead.
Still trying to figure out for a second. It's hard for me to know that right now with how the metagame looks. I'm not so sure if people are going to change their decks a whole lot because of Assassin's Trophy. And I think it's weird because Assassin's Trophy is good against things that cost a lot of mana in Modern. I mean, I guess it's good against technically everything already kills it, but like you really want to hit stuff that's higher mana. So I guess it's a time when like the metagame has more heavily costed things would be the time where I'd want to play Assassin's Trophy, and where in decks like maybe like Infect and Affinity are running around more, it's probably better to play Mardu Pyromancer would be my guess from what the question is sounding like, but I could be misinterpreting the question, so if I am, sorry.
Yeah, I'll just read it again really quickly. It just says, do you think if Assassin's Trophy is good enough to make Green Black X good again, that it just makes Mardu Pyromancer the better choice? I think it is specifically saying that Mardu is good against Green Black X.
Oh, well, I don't think Assassin's Trophy fixed that matchup personally, but...
Yeah, so I agree with the way that you're reading that, Spencer, and I would agree that Mardu is pretty favored in that matchup, but I don't think that it'll ever be... I don't think that the days of Modern where green-black decks are 40% of the meta are ever coming back, so I don't think that that's like a reason to play Mardu Pyromancer.
The worst version of the deck if Assassin's Trophy is that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
We'd unban Twin, we could.
Matt, why don't you take a stab at that question? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think Assassin's Trophy is going to be pretty great, and I don't see a compelling reason to play Mardu over any kind of green-black strategy with Assassin's Trophy being a card. I think it's just going to shore up way too many of your weak spots as a mid-range deck, and that really excites me a lot, actually.
That's true. Maybe a place that could be interesting is like the Logan Nettles Jund deck that plays Bedlam Reveler and stuff like that, that kind of is trying to tap into what Mardu does, but also lets you play the powerful cards like Assassin's Trophy.
Yeah, that could be true.
Who knows? The mana base sounds like a nightmare, but it could be good.
It's certainly doable to play a Mardu deck with Assassin's Trophy that's not even... I mean, it wouldn't even be that hard to figure out. It's just a question of whether that kind of thing complements the Mardu strategy, right? Because you're already going to be playing things like Blood Moon in general. Sure. So you're definitely going to have to omit that if you're going to play Assassin's Trophy.
Right, I agree with that.
True.
Michael, the next question is, how do you personally justify the financial cost of actively playing Magic? I love this game, but it's really poor value in terms of dollars. Fun, sometimes, and especially right now with my wedding this weekend, followed by a honeymoon vacation, it's hard to feel that continuing to play Magic in the competitive scene is justifiable.
I mean, I would agree with that. I don't really know that that's an answerable question. If you feel like you can't justify playing Magic financially, I probably wouldn't play.
I mostly agree with that. I think that you have to just be honest with where you're at with yourself. That's why so many people take breaks, right? Is like playing competitive Magic and like owning a certain number of decks and going to a certain number of events and things like that is just like really expensive for not a lot of return. In fact, pretty close to zero return for most events. So I would say that you need to think about like what your goals are, right? So if your goal is to like qualify for every Pro Tour and you can't financially do it, then you shouldn't try because that's not fair to yourself. If your goal is like to win, you know, an RPTQ here or there, or, you know, yeah, even just that, win a PPTQ, win some RPTQs here or there. I think that, you know, figuring out how to do that on the budget that you have is totally possible. It just kind of depends on you. And that's personal and something that you'll need to justify yourself. So, the next question that we have is, any general advice for playing against hate in modern? I'm new to the format. I picked up Bridgevine. And before this, I was primarily a standard limited player. Playing two or three games severely handicapped is something that I'm used to, and isn't something that I'm used to, and any help would be appreciated. Matt, why don't you go first on this one?
Well, I think that mostly having a game plan against whatever hate you expect is really important. With Bridgevine specifically, I know that I've personally gone through a lot of different ways to beat the hate. Everything from having actual enchant removal to just deciding that playing like an aggro deck is the right way to go. Basically, the playing against the hate in modern, it's very important to know what ways your opponents are going to try to attack your strategy, and then what ways you want to counter that. There's really no other way to put it other than that. Like, if you're playing, you know, Bridgevine, you expect Leyline of the Void, you have to decide whether you can win with your, you know, janky creatures, or if you want to try to actually board in a way to beat a Leyline.
Casey, you've boarded in a lot of hateful cards in your time playing Modern. Anything specific that you can point out to listeners that people did well against you when you were bringing in hateful cards?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different ways. It depends on kind of what it is. If it's like Affinity, having a backup plan where like Gear Report, Aether Grid, or something similar, another way to win the game if your opponent does have Stony Silence. For decks that are graveyard reliant, trying to beat something like Rest in Peace or Leyline of the Void, whatever it is, just one, you don't have to go all out every time you combo off. If you have a way to destroy the Rest in Peace, have something left over for if they do play Rest in Peace, you can blow up the Rest in Peace and then go back off. You're not starting from an empty hand or something like that. You know, maybe one Bengevine is usually enough to put the pressure on. You don't need to get rid of all of your resources to get that first attack in. That kind of thing, just play a little bit more conservatively. Try to grind them out, because your strategy, even if you have to go off more than once, your deck is probably going to be good enough. So, yeah, either play around it or play through it.
You know, that's a really good answer. Chat has a question, Mason. They say, what would you play in Sultai against Vinemare in Standard?
Oh, like as a way to beat Vinemare?
Yeah.
Plague Crafter, I think is the name. It's a 3-mana 3/2 that when it ETBs, each player sacks a creature or a planeswalker, and if a player doesn't have a creature, they discard a card. So that's like a kind of versatile answer. It's kind of like Doomfall, right, out of your sideboard.
I think if you have some number of Eldest Reborns in your deck, in the main deck, it's really good to supplement those things. That can be an answer to hexproof creatures in those type of decks. Just not a very reliable one, but it's at least an out.
Yeah, it's expensive, but if you can like clear the way, then Eldest Reborn will go the distance. Those two would be the ones that pop into my head.
Yeah, thanks so much for the question, chat. The next question that we have is there any good ways so you can figure out when to board when looking at somebody else's deck? We actually did an entire episode on this, but let's do a high level. When you're looking at somebody else's deck, Michael, like what do you do to decide how to board?
I think sort of trying to you can start by looking at the main deck sometimes and just think about different matchups and see what you'd like to cut. You can also take a look at the sideboard and kind of try to put things into buckets or something similar, where like your thought process is, you know, okay, so maybe these sets of cards coming together. It really depends on like how much you're struggling with figuring out how they're sideboarding. The more linear a deck is, I think the more that the same cards come out over and over again, and the less linear a deck is, typically the more what cards you're boarding out change match to match. That would be my kind of very basic advice.
Cool. Awesome. I think that's great advice. Anything to add to that, Matt?
Additionally, more linear decks, you probably want to sideboard less cards, so just something to keep in mind.
Sure.
But yeah, that was a pretty good summation. Just understand, you know, why, or I don't know. It's easier if you can, like, yeah, look at the sideboard and just kind of determine which kinds of matchups each card's come in. Like you said, put them into buckets. So.
I think so too. I think that's, you know, you're building a 75, right? You're not building a 60 and a 15, and it's important to think about that when you're looking at other people's decks too. Awesome. Let's move on to our training grounds. So this is, I just want to thank the patrons for the questions. Like, I wanted to get as many questions as we could out of the way. These are some of the ones from the Facebook group. So thank you so much to our contract critics. If you want to be a part of that kind of stuff, just go to the Patreon page, patreon.com/ccmpg. Become a patron, $5 or more, you have access to that group. It's super awesome. And I would highly recommend joining the Patreon real soon because things are about to change. Hint, hint. Anyway.
Are we at the AMSR episode I've been winning? Is that the change?
Yep.
That's the change, but Michael.
Only if you are a $15 patron already.
This is the topic. Do you think I could even be on that podcast, Michael?
No. No.
That's actually correct, I believe.
It's the Mason Clark hour.
Only if you join me, baby. We got to tag team it.
Well, let's get into our training rounds. Every week on the show, we want to talk about something that's going to hopefully help you get better at Magic the Gathering and life in general. And this week, we are doing one of Matt's favorite type of topics. We're doing self-evaluation. Matt, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about the biggest thing that we learned on CCMTG.
And, you know, this is 250 episodes is, like, really cool. We've been doing this for over 5 years. Fun fact for those who are new listeners, when we started, I told Matt and Casey that I would get a tattoo if we ever got to 100 episodes.
Oh man, I totally forgot about that and was going to let you off the hook until just now.
But Casey luckily let me out of the deal. So,
why does Casey have that authority?
Because I also did 100 episodes.
I see.
Yeah, so he also would have to get a CCMTG tattoo.
I don't think that was ever part of the deal. But I think that gave me the power to let you out of it.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I'll take it. But over those episodes that we've done, we've learned a lot. And I just want to take a moment to like give everybody a chance to share what they've learned with the listeners in all of this. So, Michael, we're letting you go first. What is your biggest lesson learned from doing constructive criticism for as long as you have?
Well, I don't really know how long I've been doing this, but a while. And I think that Probably the hard you. It sounds strange, but probably the hardest part of all of this is just doing something every week. And I think that more than anything else, I've learned just how it's given me a lot of respect for people who like are writing every week, people who are creating content every week, and my own kind of journey playing. Has given me a lot of respect for people who spend a lot of time playing and just people contributing to the Magic community in general. So I think that ultimately my biggest takeaway has just kind of been how much I like at least most of the Magic community as a whole, and how much I appreciate the listeners and the people who take the time to interact with us on a regular basis.
Michael, people literally just got to watch your Magic journey through this podcast. Like, you took a break from Magic, you came back, you started playing PBQs, you got invited on the show, I mean, pretty early on in all of that, and then people have watched you qualify for your first Pro Tour, listened to you through your testing process, listened to you as you become Silver. Like, how has that been for you? Because, you know, I don't think any of us really have that experience. You know, Casey and I, and Matt, they all got to listen to us qualify for our first Pro Tour. Matt Toppin is his first GP. But your whole Magic career is encapsulated in one place.
Well, maybe I got better, but maybe I got worse, too. I don't know. You can go back and listen and tell me.
Still a lot smarter back then.
Still a bit. That has been steadfast. Yeah,
progressively more dumb as time goes on, so you know, it's really working against me. The backslide is real. I think that like trying to sort of being asked to regularly comment on your process or your progress, I think is valuable, and I think that in some ways doing a show for most of the time has held me accountable to some extent. So I think that in terms of goals and just sort of continuing to, if nothing else, be kind of forced to try to improve in some way, measurable or less so, I think that doing the show in some ways has probably helped me improve.
Yeah. Mason, you're up next. What has your time as a new, now official
dubbed
co-host of Constructive Criticism? I did only invite co-hosts on, so when we have new co-host power rankings, Mason has to be included, people. So the Nashville contingent is going to get some votes in. Mason, what is doing this podcast taught you?
Well, in classic Michael Hinderacher fashion, he stole my great idea. No, but I was going to say something very similar to what Michael said about, how making content every week really should, like, gain respect and that kind of stuff. But I had a backup one because I knew I was going second. I knew Michael Hinderacher loves to steal my thunder. So I was ready. Can't get me, Michael. The other thing, well, you're good at that, and you're really good at counting to three. You always say four is a really big number. So I know you got down 1, 2, 3. But no, one of the things that I've kind of grown at and got better at is making sure to, like, try and explain my thought process and share where I'm coming from, along with just being better at, like, it's a weird thing to say, but doing a better job of expressing myself in a podcast medium, because I have done content in the past where it's video form and I can use my hands and, like, nonverbal stuff to communicate. I do a lot of that in real life too, but on a podcast, you can only use your words. So it's, you have to be much more precise, I feel, to get your message across. And that's one of the big things that's helped me outside of magic as well. And then a more magic-related one, it's interesting for me. I think we talked about this a little bit on episode 200 or something back then. But for me, it's been a really weird journey where it's like, I started listening to the podcast right around the time Manny left and Michael came on. Then I started working with the podcast and I got on the podcast and I've, like, co-hosted, I guess, now is the way to say it officially. So I've co-hosted the podcast for a bit.
I believe you hosted the podcast.
I did. I hosted the podcast for a good number of episodes. I probably have the second number. I think I'd be the second highest on hosted the show. Is that right?
Easily. Spencer? Easily the second.
And easily the second best at it too, baby. Boom.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. We all know, yeah, whatever. But regardless, it's been a weird journey. And looking back on it, it's hard. I know I just said I got better at, like, trying to express myself in thought, but I don't know how to express this. So it's kind of funny, but it's very surreal is the word I would use. So, yeah.
Mason, I think that one of the things that I have noticed in my time working with you is how much better you've gotten at magic since I've met you. Like, I think it's like leaps and bounds better compared to, I mean, I think that the podcast has forced all of us to get a lot better at the game than we were if we hadn't had the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But you specifically jump out as somebody who not only got better at magic, but got, like you said, better at explaining it and talking about it. And you know, is that a skill that you translate into your day-to-day life, that communication skill about explaining your thought process to people?
Yeah, it's helpful with my job. So I don't know if I've ever actually said what my job is on the show. But
I mean, you're 12, so I hope it's not that intensive.
Well, child labor laws are different in Tennessee. But I'm a neurofeedback technician. So what that means is, I'm going to give you the TLDR here, is we hook kids up to a machine, and sometimes adults. They watch a movie, and if they're paying attention and focusing, the screen stays full. And if you start to lose focus, then it shrinks. And that is a hard thing to explain to parents, and especially children, about how the process works and how simple it actually really is. So it has helped with explaining the more minute details and minutiae to not only kids, but to the parents as well, who sometimes parents, you know, some are skeptical, some aren't, you know, it really varies from person to person, but it's definitely helped there. And along with the playing magic thing, I think that's part of what I was trying to get at with my journey on it. Cause I wanted to win a PBTQ so then I could play an RPTQ, and now I'm really trying to hit the Pro Tour. So it definitely has been a thing where the podcast has pushed me and my own goals have pushed me, and it's been very helpful to have them both. It's like it's hard to slack when you're hosting such an amazing podcast, like Even or Odd Podcasts on every major podcast app, download now, or you're hosting Constructive Criticism. So you know, it's very hard to slip up and fall behind any of those two motivators, which is Even or Odds podcast on all major
Know that we were literally going to have a part of the podcast where you get to talk about your podcast.
Oh, you mean the Even or Odds podcast, which someone said has the best set review of all time?
I don't know. I don't know
if it's an Even or Odds podcast. So I just wanted to make sure to say it clearly at Even Odds Pod on Twitter.
Okay. What'd you say it was called?
The Even or Odds podcast.
Okay. Matt, what this is, it's your turn, man. I know that you weren't excited, but
okay, so well, I took this question more Magic-related than anything. I mean, originally I did think about all the things that I have learned as far as content creation and, you know, trying to be a better podcaster. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned from this podcast is actually one of our earliest episodes, which is having a reason to do things. And some of you know and some of you don't that I kind of come from an esports background. So I played a lot of Halo 3 competitively, and in those kind of games, you're not given time to make decisions, so you have to do so many things on instinct. And the problem is, when you translate that over to Magic, oftentimes you find a line that looks good and then follow through with it and then realize immediately afterwards that there was something better you could have been doing. And one of our earliest episodes, we talked about having a reason, and I think we've revisited it since then.
Yeah, I think that it's a foundational thing, right? Like,
right.
There are so many things that are so big that you can do multiple episodes on them about the specifics of them. And having a reason to make when you make a decision in a game of Magic is one of the ones that we thought translated really well into day-to-day life. Like,
right.
You can just go do whatever you're going to do, or you can thoughtfully make decisions and you know do things. More thoughtfully,
I would say that it works both ways, though, in some senses. Like, I've actually seen people that are just like have a sort of paralysis because they can't make a decision about anything, so it is actually a nice skill set to be able to work off of instinct when you need to. But the problem is, in Magic, you're actually allowed, you know, a certain amount of time to make a decision, so you should definitely utilize that. And it's something that I've been working on. And even when I did the episode originally about it, you know, what was it, like 5 years ago now? I don't think that I fully understood what I was trying to say, or you know, the topic we were talking about. And I've come to learn more and more about having a reason to do things in Magic.
It's kind of funny, you know. We talk all the time and we joke all the time about how bad we are at Magic, right? And the reason that we say that is, for one, we're really bad at this game. And for two, the reason that we know we're bad at this game is because of how much better we've gotten at it and how much room that we see ourselves in the potential for us to grow in it. It's not that we're bad compared to, you know, the average player, right? That's not the case at all. I think literally everyone on this is like probably top 2000 in the world on Elo. Like, I would not be surprised. Or maybe 3,000, I don't know. Anyway, regardless, I think I'm in the 3,000s. And that's like the top 1% of players, according to Wizards. But the truth is like, the delta between, you know, where a PPD grinder or a Silver Pro or, a, you know, just a grinder compared to the greatest of the greats is so big that the minutia that Matt's talking about, and like, we did this episode on this subject that I thought I understood, it's 5 years later and I know so much more about the subject than I ever did at the beginning. It's really true. And I think a lot of what this podcast is about.
And I think the biggest factor is that now that I know a little bit more about the subject, I realize that I don't know anything about it.
not enough, right? You never know enough about it. So, Casey, what about you, man? Like, you have an interesting relationship with Magic right now, but you have a really great relationship with everybody on the show and with the show itself, to be honest.
Well, thanks. I think the biggest thing I've learned is, you know, when we're doing like a call and response type of format, to always go first, because everything I thought of has been said already. But, you know, while I've been listening to things that I already thought about, I think some more. And I think a big takeaway that I've had is trying to force yourself to recognize and free yourself from your personal biases, right? Everybody has biases about a lot of things in life, but especially Magic, whether it's card evaluations, decks, things like that, recognizing that, you know, everybody's going to have a certain proclivity or a tendency to evaluate cards based on cards they like versus cards they don't like, or cards that have similarities with cards that either have existed before, that either were popular or were not popular in their own formats. And just like really learning how to be open-minded about ideas, like just because, you know, this card has been bad before or this type of deck has been bad before doesn't mean it is now, right? There's lots of decks that if you look at them outside of the context of their own format, they look like complete nonsense. But in context of their own format, they were powerhouse decks. So that's just kind of a small snapshot, but really it's, yeah, just recognizing and trying to act against your own biases. Something that I learned a lot about from this show.
Do you think that that's helped you? That would help. I mean, I've learned some of that. I'm still really bad at it. But is that something that helps you at work or even in your relationship, things like that?
Oh, definitely. Like, just being able to, one, recognize that you have biases and then figuring out what they are is going to help you a lot. Whether it's from, you know, meeting people that maybe have a little bit different background or a different viewpoint than you do, or, you know, trying different foods. Just because something might have similarities to something you haven't liked in the past doesn't mean you're not going to like this. Think about things that you might like about it, whatever, or about this person. Keeping an open mind as far as career opportunities. Like, I've done a lot of things that I probably don't know that I would have gotten myself into if I didn't have that mindset of, you know, maybe there is a positive to this, something I'm not considering. So definitely.
Well, I don't know how I did it, but none of you guys said mine. this podcast taught me something really important in my life. And that's dedication and hard work. This is the longest I've ever done anything outside of my relationship with my wife. I've never had a job this long. I certainly didn't do this much school. I've definitely done more episodes of this, like, than I did, you know, days in high school. And definitely more than my days in college. Like, there's not even a comparison in my life to constructive criticism at this point. And, you know, I sit there and I think, you know, about how lucky I am to be surrounded by these amazing people. And two, how much hard work has gone into this. Like, I can't express the amount of time that I spend thinking about this show, this network, but it's made me so much better at everything in my life. Like, the being process oriented, which is something that we teach on this show, and doing that at work and doing that in my marriage and doing that in my relationships has for me just changed my life in a real meaningful and positive way. And this concept of always improving and putting that into everything that I do is just, there's not even words to describe the impact that it's had. You know, I have doubled my yearly income twice since we've done this podcast, and it's through hard work and good luck. And that hard work and good luck is something that we talk about every week on this show. And, you know, I'm a really lucky guy to have this and to have learned the processes that I've learned and the mindset that I've learned. And it's really funny. I talked to somebody about the podcast a long time ago, and they asked me if it's fake, if we believe the stuff that we're saying, or if we're just these self-righteous, you know, talking the talk. And I think that when sometimes it is fake, sometimes we don't believe what we're saying, but I think that the truth is that we are saying it because we know it's right, and we need to continue to fake saying that we believe it until we actually do believe it. And I think that we've done that on this show, and we've changed ourselves and our personalities and and the bad things about us, and improve them by forcing us to realize the truths and our shortcomings by doing this show. Mason, you're nodding yes.
it's funny to hear them say that. It's also like, you know, do as I say, not as I do. Or it's like, you know, you might, like, a parent might smoke, but they're going to tell their kid not to smoke, right?
Yeah.
and it might be working. It's just not, it's funny. And I agree with everything you're saying, but yeah, it's just funny to hear people say that, like, and almost as if it matters to the show, right? Like, what I might be saying about sideboarding could be correct. I'm not good at it. Doesn't mean what I'm saying doesn't matter. So it's interesting. Keep talking. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I think that at the end of the day, you know, the reason that we're so process oriented is because the goal of the show has always been to help people get better at the game. And, you know, and honestly, to help ourselves, right? Like, I think that in our initial meetings, you know, part of it is like, what would we want to listen to as PPTQ grinders? Like, what would, or PTQ grinders at the time, like, how, what would help us get better at Magic? And what have we learned that can help others while we're getting better ourselves? And, you know, I think that I, for one, have applied those lessons into my daily life a lot. And it's really helped me. And I owe the podcast, and I owe you guys and Quentin and Manny. And, you know, I owe you guys a lot. And I just want to say thanks. So. Also, for the record, I believe Michael's done 2 years. Casey's done like 100 and something, like 102 episodes.
There's no way that's right. I did the first 100 and then came back for quite a few.
Oh, that's, I thought we did the math and you like at 100. Oh, you did like, you came back again. That's right. So you've probably done like 140.
Yeah, I was going to say, Casey was on the podcast like a regular when I started. About that. So he did at least 20 or 30 there.
So it's definitely goes Casey, Michael, Matt, Manny, Quentin, Mason.
I might be pretty close to Manny. I don't know. I think you underestimate the amount of times that I've wiggled my way in here somehow. For clarification, all of us are in the top 5,000 of ELO Project, except for Casey. So there you go.
That's not surprising. My GP record is so bad.
Not a dagger, just, you know, a little fact checking.
How does it go?
In order from bottom to top, it's me, Spencer, Kling, and Hinderocker's in the top 1,000. Hinderocker's like 920. Just Blaze.
Wait, so it goes Casey from bottom. It goes Casey, you, me, Matt, Michael.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I would expect it to go.
Yeah,
due to the number that the amount that Casey plays Magic, and then the skill level of the players we're talking.
Yeah, I kind of thought Hinderocker might be at the bottom personally. I mean, have you listened to the podcast?
It's kind of the worst.
You watched me actually any time in the last 2 months?
Yeah, I watched your stream at twitch.tv/, and I don't know what the rest of it is.
Sure, he's only good at self-promotion, guys. He's only good at self-promotion.
It's Hinderocker? Yeah, I only know mine, which is twitch.tv/TheMasonClark. I stream every Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. You know, but those are the only ones I know.
So you're saying that your Twitch channel is named after the host of the Even Odds Pod, but
correct,
not the Even Odds Pod itself.
I want to die right now.
Correct. I figured the Mason Clark would be a weird name for the podcast, but no joke, name was floated for a little bit.
The Mason Clark Show.
Yeah, Trey was like, "I'm in the rename Mason Clark podcast featuring Trey." So, you know, these kind of things that floated around. We had a lot of really great names. So,
well, yeah. I just want to say thanks to you guys again. Like, I love you guys. Like, legitimately, I rank you guys every week. That's how much I love you. So, wow. So, where can people find you, Mason?
I'm really bad at this, so give me a second here. You can follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheMasonClark. I stream every Sunday, Monday, and I try and get a Tuesday stream in there sometimes. Don't make any promises. You can also find the VODs for that over at youtube.com/constructedcriticism, where you can also find this show and all the other great shows on the network. You can follow me on Twitter at Mason E. Clark. You'll see me retweet everything there from my work on Proven Combatants to what some call the best podcast launched in September for Magic the Gathering, Even Odds Podcast, where me and my friend Trey help people on the PPDQ grind. Because, you know, there was a podcast, I don't know if you guys ever heard of this one, it's called Constructed Criticism. Sometimes they say stuff, they don't really mean it all the time. They used to focus on PPDQ grinding, then they got too good. Now they only focus on Pro Tours and GPs. They're too good. The podcast is insane. You should definitely subscribe. But since they're not doing that, we're focusing on PPDQ RBQs. We're sliding in. We're the Nightwing to their Batman. So you can follow there at Even's Odd Podcast on Twitter. And on iTunes, you can find it.
That
I believe
like
on
3 minutes. That was so long.
I'm not done yet. You can also find me on Facebook at Mason E. Clark. Feel free to slide into my DMs. Single.
What's your Tinder handle? Tell them that.
My Tinder handle is Mason Clark, and it's me. If you see me, swipe right, please.
This is so inconsistent. You really need to, like...
It's called building a brand, Mason.
Tinder, first off, Tinder's garbage. Bumble's where it's at. That's first.
Second. To be fair, I stayed at Grand Prix Vegas with Mason, and Mason had his phone in front of him every time he was talking to people, and he was just swiping right on every single person. And then he looks down at his phone, and he goes, oh, there's no more people to swipe right on. After, like, 3 days of swiping right, he ran out of people. He swiped right on every single person in the area.
I forgot. Me and Henry Rucker also changed the age parameters, and we learned some interesting things about Tinder and Bumble. If you go to Las Vegas specifically, and you make it so it's older people, turns out not old people have their age set to that on Tinder/Bumble. Who knew? A certain type of worker. I'm not sure, though. I think they're like construction. But yeah.
Everything that Mason said is not true. No, some of it is. But it's actually youtube.com/c/constructive criticism. Michael, where can people find you?
Not nearly as many places as Mason, I'll tell you that.
Uh-huh.
So you should be happy because you can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Handrocker. You can probably find me in person if you're good at identifying very average height people. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG, but you can't probably find me anywhere else because, you know.
So you're searching for the 5-0s. Where would they find you there?
Well, that's a secret.
One of those grinders. Matt, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook, Matthew Kling, or you can find me on Twitter at The Witch Kling.
You can find me every week on tons of different content. Trophy Mages, I stream every week. It's actually going to be Wednesdays and Saturdays now, as I'm going to start streaming PTQs. Not every Saturday, though, but every Wednesday. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H, and you can find the podcast at CCMTG, and you know, give us a like. All the stuff. There's so much going on in the network, whether it's Common Knowledge, Homeward Path. You know, there's this Even Odds show that just started that's, like, pretty decent.
I've heard a lot of good things about that.
I hear they have the best producer in all of Magic.
I'll let you know.
Both never heard of them and think that they're awful, so I don't know.
I have a screenshot from you. You said nice things. You can't take this from me.
Casey, where can people find
you? I was like, Matt said nice things about me.
Casey, where can people find you?
You don't need to find me. You can find me on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst, and
you can find me in the parking lot if you want to find me.
I'll find you.
Exactly.
I just want to thank everybody who's watching live tonight. It was really fun to. Apparently, people find Mason's, you know, 7-minute where you can find me segment really funny. But I just want to thank the listeners. I know that live shows aren't the podcast listeners' favorite, but I wanted to celebrate with people that wanted to come and do it with us. 250 episodes in 5 years is really cool for us. So if you enjoy the community, you can join the Constructive Criticism family on Facebook. You can join the Discord. I really need to get a link to it. I'm so sorry. I'm going to post the link in the Facebook group again and stuff. The Discord's actually getting more active. I'm really happy with it. It's for Heezy Game Media instead of Constructive Criticism. So you got Mason in there talking about Smash. You got people in there talking about Game of Thrones. You got people in there talking about books, stuff like that. So it's just a nerd culture Discord with tons of Magic stuff as well. So super cool. Check that out. And then, guys, what did you learn today, Michael?
I can't really learn that much in a single day. If there's anything I've learned about myself, it's that I often am incapable of learning. I learned that Mason, if I ever need a plug, I know who I'm going to hire to do it.
Hype man.
Matt, what did you learn today?
Well, I learned that if you are in a 5-person setting and you are all going to answer the same question and it's very open to interpretation and, like, incredibly, you know, vague, you should always go first because everybody's going to say the same thing.
Well,
I already said that. If
better luck, you didn't go.
I know, but that's why I learned it from you, Casey.
Oh, okay.
Which also means that, unfortunately, Casey has to go after Matt for this. So
yeah,
also stole his thunder for this.
Today I learned that when actually I didn't learn this today. I already knew this, but I just wanted to point out Mason's laugh because it's
ridiculous. Yeah, I was just about to say that. I learned that Mason laughs like a dying dolphin. What is this? Like a seal, I guess. A seal is what I'm thinking of.
Thank you everybody for listening. Don't forget to check out our sponsors at Oasis Games and Gaming, patreon.com/ccmtg. We'll see you guys all next week with a brand new episode. And stay tuned for some big changes coming down the way. So thanks everybody.